This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Good morning, Laura, and good morning to all of you, and welcome to the Saturday Morning Show. One more week of working from our Arizona studio in Scottsdale, where we haven't seen freezing weather this past week, but we did see a morning or two in the desert where it got down to 50 degrees. Currently 60 degrees now as the baseball fans begin to leave the valley and head for all of the home baseball team cities across the country. But it's been a great snowbird season, according to my friends in the restaurant business. Even though the weather got a little cool, they say it should be back up into the 90s by tomorrow. So, Max Armstrong and I with you until 6 o'clock this morning at the end of a very eventful week in the marketplace. Wall Street, we had the monthly employment report yesterday. We had remarks by Fed Chief Janet Yellen middle of the week that sent some people to the marketplace saying, oh, we're going to get interest rate increases, others saying, no, they're going to back away. And then, of course, in the world of agriculture, on the last day of the month, on Thursday, the grain stocks report, but the big surprise was the planting intentions report. That's a survey of farmers across the U.S. done the first 2 weeks of March, asking them how many acres of corn, wheat, rice, cotton, and all of the other crops they're going to plant in this crop year. And the big surprise, no doubt it was a huge surprise, and the market reacted by a sharply lower corn market on Thursday. They were looking for about 90 million acres planted to corn this year because, let's face it, the last couple of years that corn price has been on the downside to the point where you can't make money growing corn at these prices. And so the feeling was, we would plant about 90 million because corn farmers wouldn't want to plant more of a crop that's costing them money. Turned out to be just the opposite. They are. So that number came in at 93 million acres in the planting intentions report, sending the corn market sharply lower. Corn and wheat and soybeans slightly higher. Cotton moved slightly lower. So it's been a busy week on the trading floors and a little bit of planting underway in the Midwest. Not very much, but in the South, they have been making some pretty good progress. So good to have you here on the Saturday Morning Show and some interesting people that we're going to be chatting with. So stay with us as we meet a young lady who is already excelling in the world of communicating the story of American agriculture. That comes when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Emily Doherty, a young lady from a town about 70 miles south of Indianapolis, was one of the stars at National Ag Day in Washington, D.C. last month. She was the National Ag Day essay winner. And after she presented her essay in front of the Salute to Agriculture banquet in the Department of Agriculture, Max Armstrong talked to her about the importance of FFA in her life.
I'm currently serving as our District 8 FFA president, which is Central Indiana. And I also have served as our Whiteland FFA's chapter president for the past 4 years. It's been a great opportunity to serve our chapter and our district and promote agriculture and FFA in our local communities.
What is so neat about FFA? What do you tell people when they ask you? If there's someone out in public and they see your blue jacket, what do you tell them that's good about FFA?
Well, everything's awesome about FFA. There's really no words to truly describe the meaning that FFA means to me. FFA is a family tradition, but it also has grew into leadership experiences, supervised agriculture experiences, as well as career development events where I compete in contests such as soil judging and job interview and everything in between. So there's so many opportunities that people can gain through the Blue Corduroy Jacket.
Talk about your award-winning essay. What was the title, and give us a basic overview.
The National Ag Day Committee had an essay contest focusing on stewardship of agriculture. So I wrote about stewardship for generations, which I focused on how the agriculture industry in general has practiced stewardship and how personally my family's heritage has practiced stewardship for over 160 years. So I was able to tell my personal story as well to emphasize how the agriculture industry in general provides for over all the people throughout the earth and how we will feed the 9 billion people in the year 2050.
Not just feeding the population now, but in the future, and at the same time caring for the land, huh?
Yes, it's so important that we preserve our earth for so many future generations to come, because I want my children to be able to have the same opportunities in agriculture that I have.
Emily, what's ahead for your future? What would you like to do in your career?
I plan on running for state office, Indiana State FFA office, in June. And then after that, I will attend Purdue University to study agriculture communications and agriculture economics. I'd like to obtain a career in the industry. I'm focusing on agriculture journalism right now, but I plan to take internships to maybe find out what specific career choice. No matter what, I want to come back to the family farm and help carry on the tradition with my brothers.
That's Emily Doherty, an outstanding young lady. She ought to be running for president, as a matter of fact, because of her presentation at National Agriculture Day in Washington, D.C. on March 15th. So congratulations to Emily, and indeed, we wish her luck, but I think she already has the talent to continue her leadership qualities with whatever job she takes. There was another event at National Agriculture Day marking the 100th anniversary of an agricultural organization. And we'll talk about that when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. 20 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show, another event at National Agriculture Day last month, the kickoff of a centennial celebration. The organization, the Farm Credit Council, it's been in business for 100 years, and they're going to be holding some special events during the coming 12 months to call attention to the role of the Farm Credit Council. Todd Van Hoos is the president and CEO of the Farm Credit Council, and he talked to Max about the role it plays in American agriculture.
The Farm Credit Council represents the farm credit system in Washington. We handle legislative work, regulatory work, and a lot of public affairs work.
And the farm credit system, of course, still the biggest ag lender in America?
I think so. We crossed the $300 billion asset threshold this year. Still have the same mission for 100 years, supporting rural communities in agriculture, reliable and consistent credit, good times and bad, a very important part of what we do.
That has been a challenging job at times. When you think of the peaks and troughs in the agriculture economy, how are we doing these days?
Well, it's tough out there. I think anybody would tell you that. We've seen commodity prices fall. We've seen land values decline, although not too much yet. Good news in California, it's been raining. So we've got some tough times ahead. You listen to USDA's economic forecast. I think we believe this is a couple of year long cycle. We certainly are working with customers right now through spring renewal season. This is a heavy renewal season in the farm credit system as people come in to finance their planning. So far, so good. We're seeing strong balance sheets from farmers right now. We're coming off a couple of years of good income, so we're pretty optimistic we can see this thing through.
The carryover from that sustained period of profitability has certainly helped, has it not, in helping maintain the portfolio of the farm credit system?
Oh, no question. You know, you have really a long series of pretty good years in agriculture, and we go into this downturn in cycle, and we see strong balance sheets. We see some cash reserves with our customers, and so they're entering it in good shape. Now, that's not true across the board. You know, dairy's been up and down. Other sectors have been impacted by weather, so you can't make blanket statements. But by and large, we go into this with a pretty strong balance sheet.
I've said different times over the years, there's almost always one segment of the ag economy that's experiencing some challenges.
It seems like that. You know, if it's not dairy, it's cattle. If it's not cattle, it's grain. If it's, you know, for a long time, it was anything related to the housing industry, things like forest products, things like nurseries, things like that. So there's always seems to be cycles. But in truth, that's one of the strengths of the Farm Credit System, because when you're a nationwide network of almost 80 cooperative lenders, you can diversify your portfolios. You're always going to have this segment or that segment that's having a tough time, but American agriculture is amazingly resilient, and we're very fortunate to finance all of it.
Let's talk about your celebration. It's a big event, an important milestone for the system.
It's 100 years. You know, not many organizations get to be 100 years old. We're very proud of that. But importantly, you know, we made a decision, as you and I were talking earlier, we made a decision early on. We could use this anniversary to look backwards or forwards, and we've very much chosen to look forward because we think there's great opportunity in rural America. We think American agriculture is one of the most powerful pillars of our economy, both in this country and across the world, and so we see a great future out there.
The individuals you are spotlighting, give us a little bit of a feel for the diversity of this bunch. As you look, I mean, it's a remarkable group. A lady who cranks out educational videos about agriculture, one of the most respected agriculture economists in America. It's an interesting list.
You're talking about Barry Flinchbaugh, and I don't know anybody in agriculture who doesn't know Barry and have a great deal of respect for him. You're on Capitol Hill right now, and I can tell you there's a legion of his minions who have gone through K-State that work in agriculture in this town, and so it's absolutely a pleasure to honor him. You know, Josh Eilers. A real American hero. You know, people throw that name around a lot, hero, but this is a real American hero. He's an Army Ranger, four back-to-back deployments to Afghanistan, Iraq, Purple Heart recipient. Now he's a rancher, and just outside of Austin, Texas, raises a purebred Wagyu beef cattle operation, supplying all those fantastic restaurants in Austin. As great a success story as that is, what really separates Josh is he's helping the University of Texas establish programs that are going to encourage more veterans to get into agriculture, and that's something we can all get behind.
Especially when you consider some of the challenges our veterans, newer veterans face in terms of PTSD, agriculture can really play an important, amazing role in helping them recover.
No question about that. You know, one of the things people often hear Tom Vilsack, our Secretary of Agriculture, talk about is the really disproportionate representation in America's military from rural communities. And as we see a lot of those veterans come back, they're going to have to be integrated into our economy. And one of the great opportunities for them is agriculture. And so we're working with organizations like Farmer Veterans Coalition, with programs like Homegrown by Heroes, to really try to ease that transition and make opportunities for our veterans coming home.
Todd, it occurs to me, and maybe this is one of your goals in this program, is for these profiles to be inspirational, for them maybe to spark a desire, you know, some kind of an interest in a younger person, maybe even an older person, that they can do some great things in the ag community.
That's exactly right. But, you know, we selected 100 of these, and the hardest thing we had to do, frankly, was get it to 100, because we had more than 1,000 nominations, and every one of those stories was inspirational. And if you think about the story of a dairy farmer in upstate New York who's on the Farm Credit East board, who also is producing educational videos for American children to learn about where their food comes from. A lot of people in this country don't really understand that anymore, and we think that connection to the farm needs to be reestablished. We think that is important for the fabric of our society and certainly important for farmers and ranchers moving forward. So we're happy to play a role in that.
I gather over the months ahead, this will be unfolded for rural America to see, and they can get to know some of these people a little bit better.
We certainly hope so. We want to take every opportunity to showcase these folks as you say, inspirational role models for our people out in rural America, because they truly are amazing stories. You know, you have a producer like Trevor Hoff out in New Windsor, Maryland, who was nearly killed in a farm accident at age 14. While he's still recovering, he starts his own beef jerky operation, right, selling it locally. That's now evolved into a local co-op that provides food across his rural community there in rural Maryland. It's just an inspirational story, and there are hundreds like that in this program.
Indeed, I'm looking forward to hearing more of the stories of the 100 people selected to be honored in the 100th year of the Farm Credit Council. Todd Van Hoos, who is president and CEO of the Farm Credit Council. You're listening to the Saturday Morning Show here on WGN Radio, and still to come, some thoughts on Samuelson Says, and a look at the ag economy from perhaps a different viewpoint. When Max talks to Steve Barr, his special guest, who will be joining us in the second half hour here on the program. High wind warnings again, and it's not just in the Midwest. Here in the desert, we've had a great deal of wind, and not too far from Phoenix and Scottsdale, north in Flagstaff, they've had high winds and snow this week in the higher elevations of Arizona. So it's been a windy spring so far, and it sounds like it's going to be that way today across the Midwest agricultural community. We'll talk a little bit more about that planting intentions report that was issued on the last day of the month. And, of course, already some of the economists and analysts are saying, well, that number on corn acres could certainly change between now and June when we get the final report on planted acreage rather than just planting intentions. And so while we had the sharp downturn in the Thursday trade after the numbers were issued, we saw a slight comeback to end the week yesterday. So what does the month of April hold in store in the marketplace? It's going to be an interesting daily story to report. Right here on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com, where it's 5:30. And I'm Orion Samuelson, back with the second half hour on the Saturday Morning Show, first Saturday of April, April 2. I hope you all survived April Fool's Day without any major mishaps yesterday. And again, as we move into this month, we begin to actively look at getting those planters going in the Midwest. So we'll be watching that throughout the remainder of April. But this morning on the second half of the show, Max Armstrong checks in with a look at the ag economy from a different viewpoint. I think you'll find it interesting. That will be coming up shortly. But right now, we say welcome to Samuelson Says. Hello, everyone. I'm Orion Samuelson, and Samuelson Says is sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. We're talking, what, politics and agriculture this morning? If you're tired of your clothing being ruined by a spill or a stain, now there's some hope. Thanks to Wink Wash Away Laundry Stain Remover. This easy and safe to use pre-wash stain remover is a must-have in the laundry room for all of your washable, color-fast fabrics, including wool, cotton, synthetics, even cashmere. And for those unexpected stains when you're on the go, watch them vanish with Wink Instant Spot Remover. Check all of the Wink products out at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. And now Samuelson Says. After many years of doing Samuelson Says, you have probably figured out by now that I do not discuss politics on this broadcast. But I've been hearing from several of you saying, why don't you talk about candidates and agriculture and give us an idea of what to look for in this long presidential election campaign? So I will break my rule and talk a little bit about politics in this election year. I will not discuss individual candidates, but I will say this. I have voted in every presidential election since the 1950s when I voted for Dwight D. Eisenhower. And this will be the toughest election I will ever vote. because I really don't see the leadership qualities we need in the White House in any of the candidates. And I think only one of the candidates has any knowledge of agriculture, and only one favors trade agreements. I'm really bothered by the candidates who say trade agreements are bad and we don't want any more and we'll work to even cancel those we've had. Trade agreements that have been in place for decades, like NAFTA, and are vitally important to the economy of agriculture in this country. We need trade agreements, and I can't imagine canceling trade agreements that have proven to be very good for America's farmers and ranchers. Other things that bother me about the political process, well, we have term limits for the president, but not for members of Congress who pass rules and regulations for us, but different rules for them. We need term limits for members of Congress. And I would impose a three-month period for campaigning and a uniform limit on spending by candidates. If you can't convince me in 3 months that I should vote for you, then you probably don't deserve my vote. And quit holding fundraising dinners with $50,000 tickets all going to the campaign while you discuss taking care of hungry people. Think of how many that could feed. And then finally, quit picking on the other candidates. Give me some programs that will make this a better country for all of us. Tell me how you will implement the programs and how you will pay for them. I may have to write in Donald Duck or Mickey Mouse. Not really. That's Samuelson Says. Max Armstrong joins us one more time this morning to talk about the marketplace from a different standpoint. Max?
Yes, Orion, that report on intentions sure was sobering, with the idea that we'll have to deal with more crop acreage, and if the planting season goes fine and the crop yields are superb, yeah, we could have much more crop to market and have to deal with persistent low prices for a while. I talked about that the other day, dealing with these peaks and troughs of the agriculture economy with someone who's watched this for a while, with a little bit different perspective. He's not a full-time farmer. He's not involved in the crop input business, but he's worked around a lot of people and worked for a lot of people who are. Steve Barr is chairman of the Osborne & Barr Advertising and Public Relations Agency, headquartered in St. Louis, with an office also in Kansas City. And he's watched this ag economy over a period of about four decades. As we visited the other day, he offered this insight.
Having been in the ag marketing business since 1973, you definitely see cycles. And this is not a pretty one with grain prices where they're at. But, you know, things always improve. You can't predict the weather globally. And, you know, we're going to assume we're at the bottom of the price range for corn, beans, and wheat. And hoping for upside from here, but a lot depends on the weather, as you know, and politics and everything else going on. So it's an interesting cycle we're in.
I visited with some folks in the farm equipment industry a few days ago, some executives who said, you know, we think we might be at the trough here. There's some positive things that we're hearing from dealers, and you would think that those guys are pretty close to the woes in the countryside.
You bet. And I was involved in the farm equipment dealership business, and I think it is. I think it is bottoming out. I think things look very positive from here on. And again, we assume some decent things will happen on the weather side, demand side, I hope. I think supply side, I think we're going to produce a lot of grain again this year if weather cooperates. So, we are in a trough. I think there's nowhere to go but up from here, hopefully. And it's going to be good, I think, in a year or two.
Will this kind of economic scenario have a chilling effect on some things that really matter? And one of those I would ask you would be research and product development that we need for the future. Another one might be the brilliant minds that we need in agriculture, who 2 years ago or 3 years ago might have looked at ag and said, yeah, you know what, this is rip-roaring, I want to get into it. And now might be saying, I could find a different industry.
Yeah. I don't sense any decline in interest and budgets for research. I think people are looking ahead and see the future of ag and, you know, increased productivity, sustainability. So I don't see any downturn in spending on research at all. And I think as far as people coming into the industry, I think with the data plays going on, climate would be one example. I think there's even more interest in agriculture as a career, profession, and business. Lots of interest from Silicon Valley And I think it's good. I think everything's good. There's more interest in ag now than I think there ever has been.
That sustained period that agriculture in the United States enjoyed certainly set this industry up for weathering the storm, wouldn't you say?
I would say so. I think dealers, farmers are well equipped for this downturn. I think we learned a lot of lessons from the past downturns, and I think we're in good shape today. I think it's going to be good.
Here's a little bit of a different area that I would ask you about, government. And it has always played a very important role in what happens on our farms across the country. And it's a very different scenario in Washington now, as you know, from watching this scene, than the kind of spirit of cooperation that we had in writing farm bills in 81 and 86 and so on.
So that's a really interesting question, and I won't pretend to be able to predict what's going to happen, but I know our past experience at Osborne & Barr and with our clients with the USDA, for example, has been really good. And I think like any other client or entity, I think if you have a good program, a good idea with the USDA, EPA, I think they'll certainly take a look at it. But it is a different environment now, and I wouldn't even pretend to predict what's going to happen with ag and our federal government.
Does it suggest, though, at the very least, Steve, that farmers have to really be engaged in that process in one way or another, whether it's individually or associations or both?
I think there's no doubt farmers must be engaged in the process, and I think this convention's a good example of how they are engaged in a very positive manner. And our experience with USB and knowing the folks at Corn Growers, for example, I think it's the best thing in agriculture, farmers willing to step up and get engaged and be involved and spend the time and effort. It takes a lot of time.
One more thing I'd ask you about is this generational change on our farms today, and there's a lot of focus on that. The fact that, you know, the guys who own the farms have quite a bit of snow on the mountain right now, and there's a tendency sometimes to not pass the reins as readily as the generation behind them would like to see. What's your overall assessment of what this means to the future of agriculture and our ability to withstand this challenging period?
So, Max, we've gone through that same generational change on our farms in Saline County, Missouri, and my father just turned 92, and he's been very, very smart about how he turned over the operation, and he developed a farm manager over the past few decades, and it's been a tremendous experience for us. But it takes a lot of planning, and I think there's a real opportunity to help farmers who need to go to the next generation of management, family or otherwise, and it represents a great opportunity for clients and the industry as a whole. But we must address it, and it's not easy. It's very difficult to accomplish. But we've been fortunate. We've had a great experience with it.
Steve Barr, chairman of the Osborne & Barr Agency, headquartered in St. Louis, and they've worked with clients ranging from DeKalb Seed to Michelin Tires. And with the likes of, well, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's National Ag Statistics Service and the United Soybean Board. Also worthy of note, Orion, was the report that came out this week from the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City looking at the agriculture credit conditions. And the Fed in Kansas City noted that more bankers have reported additional declines in the situation of farmers. The fourth quarter of 2015 was the 11th consecutive quarter of lower farm income in that district served by the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City. Among 190 survey respondents of those small town bankers, those ag bankers, only three of the 190 indicated farm income was higher than a year ago, whereas 166 reported income had declined, and 81% of those respondents, 81% of the ag bankers, indicated they expect income to be even lower for this current quarter. This is also interesting to note when you take a look at the debt-to-asset ratio that is currently projected. The Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City is looking at a farmer debt-to-asset ratio of 16.1, and that is up from the current projection of the Department of Agriculture of 13.2. This is a noteworthy rise, the Kansas City Fed says, in the debt-to-asset ratio of farmers. However, they noted also it is still well below the levels observed during the farm bust of the 1980s. Orion?
Well, Max, there's no question that change happens every day in the lives of all of us, and it certainly happens in the world of agriculture. As a matter of fact, I've commented many times that even though you or your family are sole owners of your farm or ranch, you're not farming it alone anymore because you have to farm with government agencies like OSHA and like the FDA and like the EPA. They're a part of your farming ranching operation. And then you have to also farm along with special interest groups, whether it be animal rights people or people concerned about the environment, about our soil and water, all making rules that will involve your farming and ranching operation. And I have to say, as I watch these stories come across my desk, if you are a producer of eggs from chickens in cages, you'd better start looking for a different way to produce eggs, because it's going to come. This week, a company, Raley's in West Sacramento, California, said it will transition all private label eggs to cage-free by July. And in addition, the company said it has set a goal of sourcing only cage-free eggs for all other brands by 2020. Raley's joins a growing number of major grocers making adjustments to offer the so-called cage-free eggs to customers. And so I know that we have some cage-produced egg farms in Illinois, and you're probably going to have to start looking at a different way to do just that. Back with a few final comments here on the Saturday morning show. 4 minutes to news time here on WGN Radio Chicago, and with the ups and downs we've had with the various reports this week, we'll take a look at where we'll start trading in the commodity world on Monday morning. We saw the lean hog contracts trade down to 10-month lows or 10-week lows yesterday as pork prices continued to decline. And so Monday, the April lean hog contract will start at $67.80 a hundredweight after dropping 55 cents yesterday. And the June hog contract will start at $79.47 after dropping $1.37 yesterday. Live cattle futures, well, we saw some limit up moves, but we saw some sharply lower moves this week. Monday, the April live cattle contract will start trading at $133 a hundredweight after gaining 7 cents yesterday, but the rest of the cattle contracts ended the day lower. And feeder cattle contracts, the April contract will start at $155.75 a hundredweight after dropping $1.32 yesterday. Grain market, a little different story, though, after the Thursday sell-off, particularly in the corn market. Wheat and soybeans didn't sell off nearly as much after the planting intentions report. And yesterday, there was a little bounce back across the board, and we ended the week with a green screen on the grain market. So Monday, the May wheat contract will start at $4.75¾ a bushel. That's after gaining a half cent yesterday. The May corn contract bounced back 2 cents yesterday. It'll start trading Monday at $3.54 a bushel. New crop December gained a quarter of a cent. It'll start trading at $3.69¾. Soybeans gained 8 cents yesterday and will start the trade Monday $9.18¼. And new crop November beans will start at $9.32¼ after gaining 8½ cents a bushel yesterday. The numbers again on planting. The corn acreage, which was the big surprise in the planting intentions report on Thursday, the guesstimates by analysts range from 89 million to 91 million acres, with an average of 89.9, rounded out to an expectation of 90 million acres planted to corn. Instead, the number came out at 93,601,000 acres. That would be the third highest corn planting level since 1944. And with that additional planting, we have corn stocks as of March 1 at 7,808,000,000 bushels. That's the second most on record. So we're going to have a lot of corn if we get a normal crop report or a normal crop season this year. Well, thank you for joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show. We're with you throughout the week with market reports and comments on the markets, and we hope you'll join us for that.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.